is no life I know to compare with your imagination. Living there, you'll be free if you truly wish to be.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Progressive Radio Network is extremely proud to announce the official PRN mobile app. Keep up with the Progressive Radio Network on the go, whenever and wherever, 24/7, with one-touch access to listen live, archives and podcasts of our latest shows, health, politics, and environmental news, featured op-eds, videos, and click to call us with just one touch. Plus, keep in touch with all our hosts via Twitter and Facebook. Download the app for free at prn.fm/mobile and keep moving forward with us.
Hello, everybody. I'm Karen Hartgless, the host of It's All About Food. Join me every Tuesday from 4 to 5 p.m. I'll be talking with experts about my favorite subject, food. We'll be covering sustainable agriculture, health, environment, animal rights, and the latest culinary developments in vegan cuisine. Check out the archive for past shows on PRN or subscribe to the show on iTunes. It's All About Food. Don't miss it.
Progressive Radio Network, information for the independent mind.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the December 23rd edition of Warrior Connection. This is Doug Rocky, and first off, I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas. Christmas will be here within just a few hours, and we have to remember what the season is all about and where it comes from. Some 40-some years ago, I was in the U.S. Air Force, and I had incredible education in electronics and avionics. And on Christmas Eve of 1970, we went to Christmas Crandallized Services at Utapau Air Force Base in Thailand. And then right after that, we went to a briefing for our combat bombing mission that was taking place that evening. We took off at about 10:30 in the evening, 11 o'clock in the evening on Christmas Eve, December 24th of 1970. And we proceeded to play Christmas music as we flew in on our woolen sack tape recorder. As we approached the bombing mission, the tape was playing Silent Night. We turned off the tape, switched it to our bombing tape that we need to record the mission. We completed our bombing mission, and each aircraft, there were three in our cell, and I dropped about 70,000 pounds of explosives that night. And then after we completed our bombing mission, we came back to Silent Night and continued on. Well, on Christmas of 1990, we were all over in Iraq, and Desert Storm was beginning. We've already initiated combat operations. We'd already initiated blowing up all of the chemical and biological stockpiles and munitions that the U.S. had given to Iraq, resulting in catastrophic health effects that we see today. At that time, I was back as a medical officer, and I had an incredible education. I was very lucky because I combined my military education and my academic university education to make everything work. Well, today we're back in war again. And one of the significant problems that we're facing is high unemployment of all the veterans. Unfortunately, we have to make sure that the veterans have the proper education, they have the proper training, and that they're prepared for the job market as they come together. Well, tonight, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've been able to join us. Jerome, are you here?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Yeah, Jerome is with us, and I'm here, too. It's Patricia Fulon, the Desert Storm Think Tank and All Veterans Advocate, and Jerome is here with us.
Fantastic. Well, Jerome, you are an individual, as I've read, are making an incredible difference in getting jobs for everybody. So, Jerome, why don't you tell us a little about yourself and what you've been doing and how you're about it?
Give us your full name, Jerome, and the name of the organization you're running.
Okay. Yes, first of all, Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. My name is Jerome Bahai, and my organization is called GC, the number 4 Vets, and it stands for Green and Gold Careers for Veterans.
Yeah, continue, Jerome.
Yeah, Jerome.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, dear. Let me, if I might, just to get this started, Jerome wrote something for Craig's List in 2011, and it was published in August of 2011. And Jerome was a sergeant with U.S. Marines in Iraq, and when he came home, he wrote about his experience, and he said, "Now that I'm home, I think back on these memories, and although they are noble, they also pain me. It pains me to wonder what their mothers would feel or what their fathers would think if they could see what I have seen, if they could look through my eyes and see what their brave sons and daughters are doing for their country." And then he goes on to say that now the struggle for them is over, and the struggle is to turn these skills of war into skills of peace. Carve out a living while not struggling or suffering as badly as before, still struggle and suffer a burden that is much easier to bear in the form of the body, but somehow impossible to bear in the form of the heart and the mind. He says the war is not over for him. It has only just begun, and this war of coming home has no formal training ground. It is a free-for-all, and it's every man for himself. It's that kind of a war. And Jerome has dedicated himself to helping veterans find their way home. Is that right, Jerome?
Yes, that's right. That's one of the things that I've taken on as I've come home. I started college, and while I was in college, I was part of the veterans club at my college, and I was taking over as president for a year, and one of the things that I asked my veterans what they would like me to help them with while I was president of the club, I was thinking that they would ask for, you know, some vacation trip to Hawaii or some kind of end of the year thing where we would have to, you know, where we'd have like a big party or something. But the veterans actually asked me to help them find jobs at a green company called Tesla Motors, which manufactures electric cars. And that's how I got started helping veterans. Was from that point on, I was very successful in getting Tesla Motors to come down and to recruit veterans. They interviewed over 80 veterans and hired about 15 at that time. And so from then on, I started to just help veterans find jobs.
And Jerome, you are a veteran, as we said, and you were in Iraq and you were blown up 5 times. And you're 34 years old today. You have some brain trauma and some nerve damage. And you yourself are not yet employed, but choose to spend your time helping veterans find jobs. You're now a member of President Barack Obama's Community Leaders Committee. And also Congresswoman Jackie Spears, Veterans Affairs Committee. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
So what the whole thing, let's talk about this, all right? When a veteran is getting out or considering getting out of the military, obviously, you know, that end of his, part of his life is over, although it's never really over. What would you advise and what does a veteran need to do in order to get prepared for a job on the outside, and then give us some kind of the steps and guidelines that the veterans can use to ensure they get employment?
Well, there's one of the things that I found is that, of course, college is very important, and having them get their bachelor's degrees, that's very important. However, there are companies out there that are willing to hire the veterans before they graduate, and even hire veterans while they're going through school. Tesla Motors is a good example. Before, they were looking for, you know, engineers, bachelor's degrees. We found out through our jobs program that the veterans that really qualified for what they needed were the veterans that were aircraft mechanics. And so we started to notice that trend, and so now they're hiring these veterans before they graduate from college. As these veterans get their degrees, then they'll be able to, you know, move up in their company. And so my suggestion to veterans is to really learn how to capitalize on what they've learned in the military, because there are so many skills now that we gain in the military that are needed in today's corporations and employers. They're looking for those for their skills, project management, you know, leadership, initiative. These are things that employers would like, regardless. You know, they would like that on top of the degrees. But if they can bring the veterans in, and the veterans can show them what they can do, you know, I find that most of my employers are very happy. You know, regardless if the veterans have a college education or not. My suggestion to veterans is that they learn how to network. And this is something that veterans really don't really have a grasp on. In the military, you can prove yourself. You pick up rank, you earn medals, you earn awards, and people, they can just look at your collar. Your commanders can just look at your chest and see your awards, and they know what you've done and what you're capable of. And so when you get out of the military and you get into the civilian sector, you don't have that available to you. No one can look at you and just tell that you are, you know, going to be a great employee. And so the problem with veterans getting out is that the networks that they've built for years while in the military are strong networks. These officers, these sergeant majors, they would give great recommendations. But when these veterans come home, those bridges are kind of burned in a way. And so the officers and sergeant majors, they can't come across back here and tell Tesla Motors or tell Cisco, you know, systems, or tell these employers out here what a great individual this person is, and they would, you know, they would benefit from hiring them. So what happens is the veterans come home and they don't have any networks established. And so you'll see a veteran that's gotten out of the military and who has friends that haven't served, and those friends are doing well and they're getting great paying jobs, but they've networked. They've had the time to stay here in the area, to network with the local employers, and the veterans haven't built that up yet. And so one of the things that veterans really need to do is they need to learn to network. They need to learn that, you know, it's not about just, you know, looking at someone's collar, at their rank, and looking at their chest anymore. It's, you have to talk, you have to tell employers what you can do and show them your confidence and show them your leadership. And so it's important that veterans network more.
I would say the other thing too, and again, you can expound on this maybe, Jerome, for us, since I had the unique thing where being in the military at the same time I was at the university and academia, and then also working around on the outside, the vocabulary of each one of these different organizations or groups or facets of your life are completely different. How can a veteran work together to learn the vocabulary of whether he's going straight into college and going to do, or, you know, brother, 4-year school, or if he's going to go to a trade school, or if he's going to go to graduate school, or if he's just going to go into employment? How do they acquire that language or communication thing? That seems to me would be critical in the whole success, wouldn't it?
Yes. There is a translation process that needs to happen. There's nonprofit groups like Source to Plowshares, like Project Hired, The Mission Continues, that help veterans to transition their resumes over from military language to civilian language. And sometimes, you know, veterans get scared because they hear, oh, some kind of Six Sigma certification, and they're like, oh, no, what is that? You know, I don't have that. But when they look at it, it's, you know, like there are certain safety protocols that are similar to what we use in the military. And so all they have to do is just familiarize themselves with that, with the terms. And then they'll say, oh, wow, you know, I did that in the military. I know exactly what that is. We didn't call it Six Sigma. We called it something else. And so there's a point where the language needs to be translated over. I've learned a lot of the language myself from networking with these companies, from going to, you know, to these employers and talking with them. Sometimes just networking at the local events that happen. A big thing is volunteer work. And if veterans, this is something I really recommend because it's not only good for making connections and networking, but it's also great for the individual, because for myself, coming home and having post-traumatic stress disorder and, you know, depression, and but, you know, doing volunteer work at the SPCA with the animals, doing volunteer work at the hippo therapy place where working with horses and children. And volunteering at these places really helped me internally. But while I was there, I'm networking with companies and corporations, because a lot of these corporations and nonprofits will have donations, and they'll have events, and I'll volunteer to help out at an event or something. And while I'm there, I'm listening to people talk, and I'm networking with them. And they're letting me know. I learned through that process how to speak the language.
You also do something unique with your veterans. The government, both state and local and federal government, offers tax incentives to employers to hire veterans. And I understand that you'll help these employers obtain these tax incentives. And that means some cold hard cash in their pocket, doesn't it? And thereby,
yes.
They're incentivized to hire a veteran. Is that right, Bear?
Yes. These tax credits aren't really like write-offs from their profit that the companies make. It's more like they're subsidies. Like they actually get credit. They actually have, you know, are reimbursed for hiring a veteran. A lot of the companies that I'm working with, that's one of the issues that we talk about and that I help them with. Because the process to file for their tax returns to get those credits and to get that revenue from the government is something that not all companies are familiar with. A lot of them will use tax attorneys or CPAs, and these are new laws, these are new, you know, credits that have come out. So I found a couple CPAs that will that are very good at it. And so what I do is I connect them with the companies so that the companies can benefit from the tax returns. And, you know, a lot of these companies that haven't gotten their tax returns, they've gone ahead and already hired veterans just because they want to help. They want to help veterans. And so a lot of companies that I've worked with haven't done their paperwork. And so one of the things that I do is I ask them, have you filed for your tax credits for hiring a veteran? And sometimes most of the time, a lot of them haven't. So I just refer them and I show them how to do it, just to help them learn that process.
I understand these tax incentives are potentially going away as the new year comes up, and particularly, I guess, if we tumble over the fiscal cliff. So do you think that if those incentives are removed, then that's not going to have a great impact on hiring the veterans, or you think it will? I know Obama made a big to-do about these incentives.
Yes, it's important that those incentives stay in place. One of the projects that I worked with was with a company called Cisco Systems. They do servers and routing and switching for a lot of the Internet stuff that we do. And we sat down at the table last year and we discussed a project to hire 3,000 veterans. And it was through not just Cisco, but they have a collaborative of 17 other companies that they work together to hire veterans. And they've already met that goal. That goal has been met. They've hired their 3,000 veterans. And this was all because of that, you know, the tax incentives that came up during that year. Mm-hmm. So it's vital that these tax credits stay in place and that this program is maintained.
Now, one of the things we have to obviously, you know, look at when the, you know, coming out of the military, obviously we have all the branches of the military, and there's a whole bunch of different, whether we call it MOS or AFSC or specialty, whatever it is, for all the different branches. So we have, obviously, the enlisted. We have junior enlisted. We have enlisted have had, you know, several years of experience, and they're still getting out, didn't complete, you know, retirement. And then we have, obviously, the officer corps. When we're looking at all this stuff, obviously, the academic preparation, vocational preparation is going to be substantially different. What kind of recommendations can you give as far as, say, a junior enlisted is, you know, basically enlisted in the military, he was in infantry or something like that, you know, right out of high school, he went and did his, you know, 3 or 4 years in the military, whatever it is, and now he's getting out looking for employment. What kind of things can you recommend or would you suggest that he follow up on? I mean, we have obviously, you know, vocational training that can be done 2 to 4 years, or you can go and get a bachelor's degree or continue on for graduate work. How would you, what kind of recommendations or guidance can you give to the individual that's getting out on that?
Well, I tell them, first of all, to take their time with their GI Bill as they get their education. I have a lot of veterans that they just put their head down, they get out, and they just go to school, and they'll kill themselves taking 20, you know, a full load of classes or 20 units. Normal is like 12 to 14 in California. And I have veterans out here taking 20 to 22 units because their GI Bill only lasts for 36 months, and so they're trying to get their bachelor's degree as quickly as possible. And one of the things that I tell these veterans is slow down. You know, if you just take half the load and use half of your GI Bill and stretch it out a little, because you want to take that time to assimilate back into the culture. Because while they're so busy and stressed just focusing on their bachelor's degrees, they're not talking. They're not networking. They're not volunteering, they're not getting into the community. And that's vital if they're going to, you know, network their way into a career. Another thing is, you know, I tell veterans to use, there's a program where you can get school credit for working. So they can work part-time and get school credit for it and still have it qualify for the GI Bill.
Is that only in the state of California, Jerome, or is that elsewhere?
You know, I'm only familiar with state of California laws, but I'm pretty sure that most colleges have a work-study program.
Mm-hmm.
And then this can give them an entry level where they can work with, you know, at an entry level, let's say being a security guard for Tesla Motors if they're not ready to work for Tesla Motors. Because these employers would still love to hire them and put them in a starting position and let them work their way up.
Mm-hmm.
And so my suggestion is that they slow down, they use this the work opportunity credits that they can get for their GI Bill, that they, you know, and that they start to network, they start to volunteer and get out into the community. Because right now, if they're in school and they're so busy networking with other students, those students are going to be looking for jobs, too. They're not going to be able to rely on that network when they graduate. They need to get into networks that are outside of that. There's tons of volunteer programs around here where you can meet, like at the horse therapy place where I went to. I've met so many people that own wineries, that own startups, that have, you know, IT firms and real estate companies and are, you know, there's heads of banks that you meet at these volunteer places. And so this is important for veterans to kind of, you know, learn to get a well-rounded, balanced diet, basically, of their social networks and not to work too hard, you know, with what they're doing right now in school. It's important, but they need to slow down.
Now, one of the things that we had, too, that I know in my work in academia in the military and extensively in Illinois and Alabama, the junior colleges and universities there, and again in the military, we had, I know at Fort McClellan, where the Chemical Corps was, and the Military Police Corps, is that you can go and get a vocational aptitude battery. And this is sort of like in preparation, what do you want to actually study, what do you want to major in, or what kind of a job do you want to get? Have you had many veterans look into the vocational aptitude battery to get the guidance on what they're really a niche for them? Or have you worked with that very much?
No, I haven't worked with that. There is one program out here called, Acuitas. And they use the ASVAB scores from the military to speed veterans through the schooling process, and so that way you can come out as an IT tech or an IT manager and get these certificates much quicker. I've used a similar assessment through the VA, through the Vocational Rehabilitation Program. And I was testing there, and that's why I was in college. It recommended that I go into engineering, and so that's the path that I was taking.
Well, there's now a program, Doug, and I know you're aware of it because you made me aware of it. There's a program that whereby young soldiers or soldiers coming out of the military are now required to take aptitude testing and to take a course, essentially, that will help prepare them for employment. And as you know, Doug, you sent me something on it. Interestingly enough, it did say in the literature that you sent me about this program that they would be open 24/7 to any soldier who was interested in calling them about aptitude and job placement. But when I rang them at various times throughout the day, interestingly enough, I could never get them on the line. So I don't know if they've already been a victim of cutback or whatever, but I know there is this intent within the Department of Defense to help soldiers coming out.
Yeah, we can give the website, and I'll give it here, and then we'll give it several more times. It's a transition, the TAP program, and it's 24/7 access for retiring and separating soldiers.
Not 24/7, though, Doug. I'm telling you, I've called 24/7. I've called at various hours, and they're not there. So perhaps...
Welcome to reality, right?
Right, exactly, exactly.
Okay. The website is www.A for Alpha, C for Charlie, A for Alpha, P for Papa, .army.mil. Again, www.acap.army.mil. And that's a website where individuals are supposed to have, access to get a hold of counselors and everything. They're also supposed to be putting this together at all the various installations, so when a person is getting out, they need to go through their chain of command to get, involved in this, where they actually have the TAP programs upon, when they're getting ready for discharge out of the military or separation.
Right. I understand it's supposed to now be mandatory prior to discharge. We shall see if it, too, does not fall victim to these tax cutbacks and all the cutbacks. I guess we'll find that out. Jerome, I know that there are many employers that are fearful of hiring veterans because they believe that veterans might not be stable or they might be suffering from PTSD. In fact, veterans are stigmatized by these thoughts, and that some employers won't even give them a second look as a consequence of that. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the Bay Area here in California is very special because I think it's one of the most veteran-friendly environments that I found. I've worked with Bowers Transportation. They are a bus company. They'll have some veterans drive, but they are concerned about some of the PTSD issues. But they do have, so they've hired veterans as managers and supervisors. So there's a lot of companies that are really trying to work around veteran issues. I have another company called Pristine Sun that just hired a couple veterans, and one of them was for AutoCAD. A lot of these are positions are starting it very well. I mean, they're above median income for the area. Cisco Systems, we had a joint program where we had the program televised over some of the military bases. Just this last month, we had 120 resumes submitted. We had 62 veterans that showed up for a recruiting event and a mentorship program. And four of the veterans, they're going to hire. 30 of them, they would like to hire, but we're putting together a program. There's grant money for employers who would like to hire veterans. But there are most of the employers don't really know about the grants, and they're just trying to help veterans. They understand that these guys are coming home. There is some of that issue about post-traumatic stress disorder. I discussed that with a winery out here in Napa Valley. They have 90 openings. It's called Trinchero Wines. They're a very big winery out there. They need technicians on their bottling and manufacturing. They need accountants. They need IT technicians. And we discussed this, and they're very aware of the problems that of post-traumatic stress disorder and things like that. But one of the things that we've noticed from looking at the numbers is that as we go down towards San Diego and Los Angeles, there's not a lot of job opportunities out there, or not as many job opportunities as up here. And right now the suicide rates are very terrible down there, almost 400 a year, actually above 400 a year. Out here in the Bay Area, San Francisco, we've, and the Bay Area itself, because of the high employment for veterans and opportunities out here, the suicide rate is very low compared to that. In San Francisco, we had 3 suicides last year. San Mateo County, we had 10. So a lot of this is because of depression, because of post-traumatic stress disorder, because of, the transition problems of crossing over from the military and back to civilian life. But employment is one thing that is shown, I think, to be a very good good form of battling, a lot of the problems that veterans have. So I think a lot of the employers here are great. They're wonderful, and I've worked with
in the San Francisco area. But you find that your experience in LA and outside of San Francisco is a different matter altogether. Is that right?
Well, I haven't been to L.A. or to San Diego. I was considering moving down there to try and start some jobs programs up. Maybe those employers down there aren't aware of the programs, the incentive programs that come from the jobs bill, that come from the stimulus program. Some employers can qualify for up to $37,000 for every veteran that they hire.
How does that work, Jerome?
Well, there's money that offsets their training. There's money that offsets when they hire the veterans. It offsets their training time, so that employers, because while they're training them up, they're losing productivity. But the grants are in place so that they can be compensated for that, and so that it doesn't affect their balance sheets. And then mm-hmm. when the veteran is up and running and performing, at standard or above standard, then they're able to, the companies are able to absorb those veterans more effectively.
Now
the
other thing too, obviously, that we have and a lot of jobs, not necessarily those that where you have a required degree in, they have regular certifications. Now, obviously, again, there's programs being put in the military, and again, the Army Times has a big story this last week, coming out now for tomorrow's edition, where the individual can go and apply and sit for the certifications based on the training they had in the military. But again, with the civilian certifications, they still have to sit for their licensing exam. So again, mm-hmm. on this thing, is there any guidance that you can have on that? Is there any help that you know of is being offered to help people get prepared for sitting for certification in their chosen profession, or how do they go about doing that?
Well, the certifications that I've come across were offered at 4-year colleges or 2-year colleges, community colleges, junior colleges. But there are some certifications that are not really well known. One of the programs that I'm doing right now is a program with a group called Accelerate. And this program is to get veterans certified as PMP, which is Project Management Professionals. The PMP certification is a very important certification. Nearly all of the Silicon Valleys here, Google, Cisco, they're all looking for this certification, and it's not a well-known certification. The certification costs about, it can cost up to $3,500 that an individual has to pay out of pocket. And so I've started a program with partnering with this Accelerate group that that teaches the PMP courses and guarantees the veterans can, you know, pass their exams. They also are able to take military experience and convert that into hours which are needed for the PMP certificate. Now, the PMP certificate, on average, when an individual has a certificate, they make about $80,000 a year. And that's because this certificate is actually created by the DOD. And now the DOD really looks for this certification as well. And so I've created this program so that veterans don't have to pay anything out of pocket. They can take sit the courses, sit the exam, get their PMP certification, and go to work for an employer. And the, you know, Cisco, like I said, I mean, they would hire these guys at top salary, which for Cisco I think is about $70,000 a year. But these are certifications that aren't really well known to, you know, I guess even civilians maybe. But this is something that I came across in a lot of my jobs projects, and so I really push that with veterans to get their PMP certification. Because a lot of them have been sergeants, have been, you know, non-commissioned officers before they get out. And so a lot of that is actually part of the PMP certification. It's, you know, having leadership and having been given projects and missions to accomplish and then accomplishing those missions. And that's one thing that companies are really looking for right now. Is it's easy to train up someone who can just do what you tell them to, but it's very hard to find someone that will, you just give them the mission and they'll do everything. They'll plan the whole thing out and they'll make sure it's accomplished. So that's one of the things that's really, really sought after right now.
Another area, I know many years ago I taught the combat medic program for the Army, and I was a combat medic myself for some time before I moved on to all the different things. But obviously there's a total need all over the country for emergency medical technicians. And again, the same thing is if you were a combat medic in the military, and again, that's changed MOS, it's changed, I think it's 68 Whiskey right now. But again, yeah, you need to get prepared for that and obviously sit for the state. You can sit for the National Registry exam, but within each state has a professional registration for an emergency medical technician where you can go and take that at the different levels, again, based on your training and education, and that's a wide opening area too. Another thing, we got a lot of truck drivers. And again, commercial driver's license. Yeah. Again, that requires very specific qualifications and everything else, and sitting for an examination. What kind of, do you see the military that are coming out that were either truck drivers or combat medics being prepared to successfully sit for these exams, or what do they need to do to get into those areas?
Well, there's actually quite a few programs. And there's some truck driving schools that are aware of these programs. A good example is Swords to Plowshares out here. They have a truck driving course where they put the veterans through. And the truck driving certification is one of those certifications that costs thousands of dollars, but veterans don't have to pay for it if they go through this program. There's so many programs like the EMT program. I haven't really worked with that very much, but to get a program like that to work, what you have to do is not only have the state, well, this is how you would do it in California anyway. You would have the state set up, you'd work with the state to create that program, where there would be a training provider who will provide the certification for veterans. But on the other end, you have to have an employer that's willing to take those veterans after they're certified. And when that's set up, then the veterans can get those certifications and go straight into those jobs through that program. But it's very hard to set up a program like that because you need the collaboration of the employers or the hospitals who say they're going to hire the EMTs. And then you have to be able to have put a program together for the state, because a lot of times the state doesn't, they're so undermanned that they don't really put together programs. They just kind of, you know, help to fund programs or help to promote them. But as far as creating programs, there's not a lot of that going on. So, for instance, with this Accelerate program, with the PMP certification, that was one I had to bring to them and put together and show them from, you know, from beginning to end what's going to happen. And they love it, and then they're going to fund it. And so there is opportunities for a program like that to come into existence. It just requires individuals who know how to put that program together to put it together.
And the funding to do that, right?
Well, the funding is already there. The funding comes from a lot of the stimulus, you know, funding and from, you know, I guess before, you know, if we go off this fiscal cliff, it might not be there. I'm not sure. But the funding was already appropriated, so the money was there or is there. And if individuals know, like if I might be able to create an EMT program, you know, now that you mention it, that could be something that I could also try later on, you know, in the future. I just noticed that the PMP was very important, so I put together the program for that. But yes, it requires a lot of collaboration from employers as well as from the state, because the state needs to know that these veterans are getting trained and they're going to go into a career. And so that way there's the bridges, you know, connected. Because the last thing they want to see is veterans invest time and invest hours and to get their certificates and then not have employment on the way out.
I think another thing that's extremely important, and I'm going to come put my academic hat on. I've taught everything from kindergarten through graduate school, and then obviously in the military too, is the veterans have to have the academic qualifications, and that means they have to be very competent in mathematics. They have to have a solid understanding of English and language and being able to read and write, obviously, and they have to have a very strong background in science. How or what programs, I mean, obviously there are different programs in different areas in different states, but if an individual is coming out, he has to make a direct effort to remove any deficiencies that he has in mathematics or science or languages, English and writing, before they go to employment. Do you see the individuals or veterans understanding that and taking the initiative to do it, or what do we need to do to improve that?
With a lot of the veterans that I've worked with, I actually find that I think the veterans getting out now probably are a lot more experienced and a lot more trained than usual. I think that's because, you know, combat zone has become so, you know, technological now. Even in a grunt battalion, we had, you know, remote control planes that we had to learn how to operate, that we had to learn how to program and, you know, throw them up into the sky so they can fly around the city and be our eyes and you know, above. We had remote control vehicles that we could use to look underneath cars or, you know, to kind of send out ahead or look into a house before we go inside. And these things were operated by, you know, they were operated by grunts. And so, you know, we're out there with a lot of this technological equipment. We have radio equipment that's far more advanced than, you know, than it used to be, I think. I remember some of the radios that we trained with were like 20, 40 pounds, and you had to carry them. But, you know, we get into the combat zone, and there's by the time we get there, you know, we have two-pound radios that transmit, you know, on three different radio frequencies, you know, HF, UHF, SATCOM, all on one radio, and this is, and it's only 2 pounds now. So, you know, I think a lot of the veterans getting out now are going to be a lot more, and just this generation, I think, coming out, you know, they're into iPods and all that stuff and Facebook and all that. And so I think that a lot of the veterans, I don't see a problem with that in a lot of the veterans that I've come across and worked with. But if that does happen, yeah, I mean, I totally recommend that they, you know, use their GI Bill and start from the basic courses in college. You know, don't worry if their GI Bill is going to end before they get their bachelor's degree, because they can qualify for scholarships and other programs that can extend their funding until they get their bachelor's. But, you know, in the meantime, just going back to the basic English courses, which, you know, at the junior college level, I've noticed I have two little brothers that are going through it, and it's like they're taking their required, you know, English 101, but they're taking the lower level, and it's the same. It's just there's no homework, and there's just more time for them to absorb. And then, you know, when they take their English 101, which is required for graduation, it's a lot easier for them, because they've already, it's basically they're taking the class again.
So, you have your own dreams and schemes, am I right? You are a book. Is that right, Jerome?
I'm sorry?
You are writing a book now. That's your dream, and your scheme right now is to write a book. Am I right?
Yes, I'm putting together a book. I have a lot of research that I've compiled about a presentation that I gave at Stanford University. It's about some mathematics that I've done, and also using satellite imagery to connect pyramid sites and Stonehenge sites, you know, to each other. And it's called Ancient GPS. It talks about how these devices, these pyramids and these Stonehenges, they perform the same functions as a GPS satellite. They measure time. They calculate the circumference of the Earth. They also give waypoints and give you your present location on a three-dimensional sphere. So that's come from my military experience combined with my college experience. Because my navigation and all that's very important in the military. So when I started to take math courses and to come up with a project, that was one of my projects, and it's become very, you know, it's become a creature of its own. It's taken, you know, its own life, and so it keeps going. I keep adding more and more research to what I'm doing.
Interesting. You know, before we're getting ready to wind down, we have a few minutes left in the program, but we sure would like to be sure that veterans and others will know how to find you. So can you please give out all of your contact information and do it slowly so that anyone who's listening who might want to know more about your book or certainly about your project, so they'll know how they can find you. Can you give that out now?
Oh, yeah, sure. So my name is Jerome Vahai. My last name is spelled V as in Victor, A-H-A-I. It's pronounced Vahai as in Hawaii. My email is my last name, Vahai, V as in Victor, A-H-A-I, at G-C, the number 4, vets.org. That's Golf Charlie, the number 4, vets.org. And I don't really answer my phone too much, but my phone number is 650-784-6138.
Good. And I imagine you welcome calls from veterans or other people who might be interested in talking to you even about the book that you're writing.
Oh, yes. I'd be happy to talk to them about both.
Great.
Yeah, Doug, obviously, you know, as more and more individuals come out, one of the problems we're going to run into, again, as this continues on, is will the individual, if he's in the Army National Guard or the Army Reserve or one of the, you know, Guard of the Reserve Forces, they're always subject to redeployment again. What kind of problems do you see with that as far as employment or dealing with the employers? Or is there something that can be worked around there? Because obviously I know from my own perspective, having been reactivated and deployed many, many times, your job just sits there on hold. And how does that affect the employers, and how do the employers view that, and how can we work around that?
Well, for example, with Cisco Systems, they're actually very military-friendly. I think a lot of companies that have government contracts are going to be more lenient towards that. I've noticed Oracle, noticed Google can tend to be the same way. I think from other, you know, standpoints with unions, if you have a union job, it's very well protected that, you know, that you can, your job will be there when you can get back. Also, you know, there are a lot of employers that in California, the laws are very strict, and it's an employee state. So, you know, if veterans are having problems with that coming home, I recommend that they go to their employment. We have an EEO, Equal Employment Opportunity Office out here. And I recommend that they really utilize that channel, because it's very helpful. The EEO is a great group, and is a very powerful organization. It's a federal office. It's a very good tool for if you have any problems or any issues with that.
Yeah, the law is supposed to protect a veteran or a soldier who goes away to serve, and he or she is supposed to come back and be able to find her job, and the law is supposed to protect that person. But sadly, that's often not the case, and the veteran or soldier has to turn to the law for enforcement of that provision of the law.
Yes, what some companies will do is they will, while the veteran's gone, or while the soldier or the Marine or, you know, the sailor is gone, they will recreate their position or, you know, effectively neutralize their position out of their structure. And so if that's happening, yes, I definitely recommend that veterans, especially in California, contact the EEO. And I'm pretty sure that it's a federal office, so I'm pretty sure it should be in every state.
Now, obviously, you got, from what we've heard tonight, you've got an extraordinarily successful program in the Bay Area of San Francisco. Are you aware of any similar programs of what you guys are doing out there in other areas of the nation?
I think that I do know of an organization in Chicago that does a really great job. It's Leave No Veteran Behind. And the founder is a veteran himself. His name is Eli Williamson. Mission Continues is another great organization. They are the best. They actually help veterans when they come back. Veterans can go and do volunteer work, and they will get a stipend for helping out and doing full-time volunteer work for volunteer organizations in their community.
Could you send us an email with the contact information and more information on these ones that you do know us about?
Yes, the Mission Continues is in St. Louis, Missouri, and Leave No Veteran Behind is in Chicago. But I will get their contact information. I don't have it, you know, on me right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Well, what's your thoughts on the wars that we're engaged in right now, Jerome? I know that you're home, and we're pleased, of course, and delighted that you're safe now. But what would you tell the politicians about the wars that are ongoing? Would you tell them to continue, or would you tell them to end it?
Well, I definitely think it's time to come home.
Mm-hmm. Overdue, isn't it? I might add that a reminder about the cost of war is that this program will last for 60 minutes, and in 60 minutes we will have spent more than $60 million on the wars that we're engaged in. We spend more than $1 million a minute on the wars that we're fighting. And I'm sure you'll agree with me that there are better ways to spend our money, correct, Jerome?
Yes, I think that there's, at this point in time, we definitely need to focus more on you know, that money being spent here at home.
You know, another thing, obviously, with the physiological effects of war, I mean, we've discussed PTSD briefly, but all the neuromuscular and all the other injuries that the individuals have encountered, how, hopefully, with, you know, getting medical care. When we look, though, at the military, if they're not having, obviously, the employer is going to hire them, and now they're going to fall under the employee's health insurance. How does the injuries or illnesses or wounds of the soldiers that incurred affect the civilian health insurance or the corporate health insurance policies?
Well, this is one thing that is really beneficial for veterans to acknowledge their injuries. Because the greatest tax credit that the employer can get for hiring them comes from them being a disabled veteran. And a disability can be a 0% rating or above, because it can be an injury that can be, you know, that was sustained in combat and maybe they've healed, but it can come back to haunt them later on. My injuries have only gotten worse. And so it's vital that veterans, you know, realize that it's not going to hurt them if they file for their disabilities with their employer. Now, with, you know, when they do file for their disabilities, and if their disabilities are high, then they will get taken care of by the VA system. And so the employers do have health care. But then this gives the veteran another system as well to rely on, which is the VA plus their health care with, you know, with their employer. And it's not going to be a problem for the employers at all. I mean, the employers are, you know, regardless, have to provide life insurance or health care and health insurance. And a lot of them provide dental. I know that, you know, Bowers Transportation here in San Francisco, they're a bus company, but they provide medical and dental for the veterans that they hire. Now, the issue is also if the veterans have a 0% rating to start because they've had injuries in the past, but they haven't really exhibited, you know, any effect on their livelihood at this time, when their health does start to deteriorate, or if it does, that rating can be increased. Now, if they get out and they don't tell the government or tell the VA hospital what happened to them and don't report those injuries, and then 10 years down the road, all of a sudden, you know, they're having back spasms or they're having, you know, epileptic seizures from traumatic brain injury, it's very hard for them to go back in and say, okay, well, this is obviously connected to the war, and then try and start a claim then. It's vital that veterans, as they're getting out, let the government know, let the VA know when they've been injured, how they were injured, and at least have that rating there, whether it's, you know, even if it's 0%, just to have it there, because later on down the road, if those injuries start to complicate, then they will have a way to
Well, you know, we're running out of time, ladies and gentlemen. Jerome, we have had a real American hero on us tonight. You not only served in war, served our nation, but you're continuing to get jobs for veterans. Jerome, it has been a distinct pleasure to have you on Warrior Connection. Thank you very much, and let's keep in contact. Ladies and gentlemen, a true American hero. Hear it for Jerome Bahai. Thank you, Jerome.
Thank you, Jerome. Happy holidays, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Merry Christmas and happy holidays.
Progressive Radio Network. Information for the independent mind.
Hello, everybody. I'm Karen Hartgless, the host of It's All About Food. Join me every Tuesday from 4 to 5 p.m. I'll be talking with experts about my favorite subject, food. We'll be covering sustainable agriculture, health, environment, animal rights, and the latest culinary developments in vegan cuisine. Check out the archive for past shows on PRN or subscribe to the show on iTunes. It's All About Food.